Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
My guest today has become a physician leader through service and education. He has served both his country and his fellow man through the military and the practice of medicine. By seizing upon educational opportunities, he has gained leadership skills. We are going to travel through time and location as we witness the making of a physician leader. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Corey Conrath. Dr. Conrath is a triple board certified physician. He's a fellow of the American Association for Physician Leadership. Dr. Conrath is a nationally known author and brings a passion for improving care for chronic disease, particularly in patients with mental illness. Corey Conrath, welcome to Sound Practice.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, as you know, this is the podcast of the American Association for Physician Leadership. So, of course, I and our audience are interested in your career path as a physician leader. Could you tell me about that journey?
Oh, yeah, that's a long journey. I didn't actually even start with medicine in the picture. I was came from lower socioeconomic, single mother, a lot of trailer parks, a lot of moving. Never stayed in a school for a full year until seventh grade. From seventh grade on, I was in Bismarck, North Dakota, so I consider myself a North Dakotan. Going through school, I was one of those kids. School's dumb. I'm going to go take over the world. I'm tough. I joined the Marine Corps when I was 17, shipped off to boot camp, and took me about 2 minutes to realize how tough I wasn't. But I did a tour with the Marine Corps. They actually gave me discipline and understanding of time management and actually how good I had it. So I did my tour at the Marine Corps and realized I need to get educated. So once I completed that, I went back to Bismarck, North Dakota, and I actually went to a community college, Bismarck State College. And it was a little embarrassing because I had to take the ACT and my math score was so low that I literally had to take intermediate algebra, which is high school algebra, just to even move on. Same with chemistry. And so I started applying myself to school at that time, missed the military, so I joined the North Dakota National Guard. And I had a summer open between my freshman and sophomore year. And so the recruiter was like, your Marine Corps job doesn't transition. You got to get a new job. And I said, well, whatever fills these 3 months, I'll take, because I'll get a job over the summer, I'll get paid, and then I'll get right back into school. And they had combat medic. I went down to San Antonio, became a combat medic, and fell in love with medicine. I think I've always been in service. That's what drew me to the Marine Corps. And then medicine is complete, service to others. And so I fell in love with it and completely dedicated myself to become a physician. I didn't really know what that meant at the time. I didn't understand the MCAT test, residency, and how many years and how long that journey was. But I jumped in head first, made it through, finished my Bismarck State College, the 2-year degree, went and got my 4-year degree from the University of Mary right there in Bismarck, and then was blessed to be accepted to Midwestern University in Downers Grove. And then I saw how expensive medical school was. At that time, I had just gotten married with our first child. And so took an Army scholarship to pay for it, the HPSP scholarship. Don't ask me what it stands for. I couldn't tell you. I just know it's HPSP. And so went ahead and went through medical school on that. And I thought I was going to be an infectious disease doctor. So I was set up to do that, went to internal medicine, and in the Army, so most physicians, you rank where you want to go, they rank you, and it's some kind of, college football ranking system that spits out where you go. In the Army, it's more like the NFL draft. They just tell you where you're going. You get drafted, and literally the program directors get around a table and draft their residents. I did not rank El Paso, Texas, because my family likes water and green things. But that's where I ended up, in El Paso, Texas. Wonderful program from the medical side, but just not good for my family. And at this time, we now have my third child was born in El Paso. So one child was born in medical school. And I volunteered to leave that program to go to Afghanistan in order to, once I was done with Afghanistan, to go back into internal medicine at a location that was more appealing to my family geographically. When I left, they said I was going to be a flight surgeon. I didn't know what that meant. So I said, okay, I'll go to Afghanistan as a flight surgeon. 6-week course, and really an Army flight surgeon is, you're responsible for everything. You're responsible for force health protection, or population health as we know it. You're responsible for the primary care. You're responsible for crew interactions, and really how well are these crews in Army helicopter working together? What is their communication styles? And a lot of like human factors type pieces. And you're not sitting in a clinic. You are walking the hangars. You're in the back of the aircraft with the guys and gals. And so you're just integrated in, which I loved. It was really nice to be able to see how they worked, and then also be their primary care physician, because you can make some real changes. Like the gentleman that has maybe 8% body fat on him is, you know, 175 and 5'10", saying his back hurts, or he's not able to run. But then you go into the gym and you see him deadlifting 400 pounds. You're like, well, maybe that's why your back hurts, and you might want to fix that form. So really, really loved it. And I was like, what is this? And what I was doing was occupational medicine. And so I learned about the residency of aerospace medicine and completely changed my trajectory from there. And I wanted to go into occupational medicine. So after my year out, working with, a lot of environmental medicine and working with, are the crews exposed to fuels, or are they exposed to chromium and some of those pieces, I went into the residency of aerospace medicine, which was a occupational aerospace medicine combined program with the Navy in Pensacola, Florida. So I got my wish of the duty station with water and green things, but in a completely different specialty. From there, we actually went through that residency and became a flight surgeon. Started in the battalion, which was a lot more primary care, but and there was also probably a good amount of being what we call a staff officer, really similar to being, maybe a VP or of a smaller organization, and then became a brigade surgeon. So I went from a group of 3,000 to about a group of 10,000 as a brigade surgeon, and that's more equivalent to a chief medical officer. And I was doing maybe half-time clinical, half-time administrative. So when I came out of the Army, I was really in that transition period of, do I become a physician leader, executive, because the Army training took me up through the officer route, where you're a military officer first, a physician second, lots of leadership training, lots of working with personnel, or go back into the clinical aspect. And so I was really torn about that. And a position came up at Marshfield Clinic Health System in Wisconsin, a rural healthcare system. They had 12 hospitals, 12,000 employees, about $3 billion in revenue. But really a local Wisconsin organization. And after interviewing, I fell in love with the organization, and it was service line medical director of occupational employee health, and they were really looking for someone to rebuild this program that they had in occupational medicine. It was very robust at one point in time. Key staff left that weren't replaced, and so it was neglected over a couple of years. So I was able to come in and build that up. And that was just a wonderful experience. But during that experience, I started to notice I had a lot of gaps in my knowledge. And those gaps were really gaps towards the administrative side, and they were finance gaps. They were some gaps in how civilian leadership works. And so I ended up getting my master's in business administration to fill those gaps. I was doing on-the-job training while getting the degree, which was an amazing experience and was really able to fill those gaps up. And that was kind of the pathway into leadership for me. Stayed there. I'm actually still working there. We're transitioning that position out. Sanford Health has acquired or merged with Marshfield Clinic, so trying to get that transferred over. And I did take a job in Nashville, Tennessee as a chief medical officer for Mental Health Cooperative, who is a value-based care organization working with severe, persistently mentally ill. And I'm the chief medical officer there with no psychiatry training whatsoever, but it's a really unique, innovative organization that was looking for a physician leader and not a psychiatrist, because they're like, we have the psychiatrist. We're really good at the treatment. We need a physician leader. And that's where I'm at today.
What a fascinating career. I'm interested in the differences that you found with practicing medicine in the military versus practicing medicine on the civilian side. Was there anything that surprised you when you you left the military and went into civilian practice of medicine?
Yeah, well, I think what surprised me the most was how my focus narrowed so much going into civilian practice. We're very specialized, and I feel it became much narrower of a practice, but my referrals were accepted much more readily on the civilian side than in the military side. So for example, I mean, in the military, as a general medical officer, so that's my intern year done only, and a state license in North Dakota, when I got sent to Afghanistan, I was the only physician on a forward operating base called FOB Wolverine that had about 5,000 personnel on it, military and civilian. And I was the only physician there. And when I showed up, they're like, all right, doc, here's your blood program. All right, doc, here's the pharmacy. You're responsible for reordering and what stock we need, you know? Oh, by the way, doc, this truck pulled up that needs to be cleared for potable water, drinking water. Or, hey, doc, vector control, that's your responsibility. So, you know, those dogs and cats and everything running around, you got to get rid of them. So what I learned to do from the military was actually make a decision. I didn't always make the right decision, and I had to pivot quite a bit, but it really helped me learn how to make a decision and how to find as much information as I could to make the best decision at the time, and really had to follow that 70-70-70 rule, you know, 70% of the information, 70% sure that I was right, and just kind of pull the trigger and go forward.
Do you think that it was valuable, obviously, from a leadership in HR management of people, that would be very valuable training. Do you think it impacted your clinical abilities?
Yeah, I mean, it did impact my clinical abilities. And I think actually, initially, it enhanced them because I was seeing so much. I was the only physician there, and I had to make a decision of a lot of stay and play or load and go decisions. And when you load and go, it's not an easy, let's load them up and go, because in Afghanistan, you're not putting anyone on the ground. That's more dangerous than just keeping them. You're having to fly them. But when you're flying them, you're putting upwards of 7 lives at risk to move a patient in a combat zone. So you have to be very judicious on what can I take care of and what do I need to move to a higher echelon of care, and which one has the most risk for a loss of life from a hole. And so risk mitigation became very, very good. When I came back to the States and I was a brigade flight surgeon, I think my clinical ability started to deteriorate a little bit because there was so much emphasis on the administration. And it just kept being that the clinical was a little bit less, a little bit less, a little bit less. And that was a primary care clinic. And also with primary care, with the military, there are quite a few specialists. They really are taking the TBIs and everything else. So it's being shuttled off.
Fascinating. Well, when in a physician's career do you think would be the best time for him or her to pursue this type of certification?
I personally think when you finish 3 years of clinical work, that's when to start looking at where do you want your career to go and who are you? So it takes a lot of self-reflection. For me personally, it happened at the four-year mark because of the way the when I came out of the military, I was forced into, am I a clinician? And am I going to work through, you know, with patients one at a time? Or am I going to go down that physician executive route? So that was a fork in the road for me. Personally, just because of who I am, my faith, there was a lot of prayer involved. And I'm analytical. So there was also a lot of reading involved. And when I came out of the military, the year before I came out, I actually scheduled tons of interviews in both realms. And I scheduled interviews with jobs that I didn't necessarily, you know, think I wanted, but that's how I learned the civilian world, was by going out and going on these interviews. So when I first came out of the military, I didn't know the difference between force health protection and population health. It was force health protection to me, but that's the same thing as population health. I didn't know those were the same words until I started going on interviews. And I learned actually so much through those initial interviews on how things operate in the civilian world. And I also learned a lot about, do I want more of a physician executive route or do I want more of a clinician route? Because that also opened up, depending on the job I applied for, talking to other physicians and understanding their career paths as well. So I'm curious by nature. And that's why I was like, well, I'm just going to go ahead and go on all these interviews and be able to make a decision that way and learn through that.
Well, this is absolutely fascinating. You've had a tremendous career already, in many more good years to come, I'm sure. What lies ahead for you as our time comes to an end? I'm looking forward to hearing what you have on your horizon.
Yeah, well, right now, my main focus is growing this model that they have here at Mental Health Cooperative, a value-based care model in a non-Medicaid expansion state that is flourishing. Because usually when I hear those three things together, I go, well, when are you going out of business? Mm-hmm. Or what enhanced fee-for-service do you have? And this place is running on a per member per month, true value-based care. So expanding that, growing this organization up. And once my work is done here, because there's so much purpose in serving the severe and persistently mentally ill, like we're mm-hmm. serving the people that you cross the street not to walk by because it's the individuals suffering from schizophrenia talking to themselves. And they don't smell the most pleasant at times either. But once this work is to a place where I'm ready to hand it off, because one thing I did learn is if you think you've done a good job and there's nothing else to do, you've been in the position too long. So once I get there, it's time for me to move on. And After the last leadership conference at AAPL, I was thinking chief medical officer, larger organization, but I've changed that. And now I'm looking at CEO of an organization, because your ability to change and your knowledge of what it takes to see a patient and be in an exam room and actually put that patient at the center is instrumental for the outcomes we're looking for our patients. So I've changed paths a little bit, and I hope to gain an opportunity to be a CEO, but that's a bit of a stretch goal.
Well, I'm not sure it's a stretch goal, but I am sure that we will be watching and expecting great things out of you as a physician leader. So my guest has been Dr. Corey Cronreth. Doctor, thank you so much for your time and good service to our country.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And I love the service to the country. My wife didn't.
Excellent. My thanks to Corey Cronreth for both his time and military service. Dr. Cronreth is in the midst of a career of service and leadership. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpracticepodcast.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpracticepodcast.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. That man Robin went to Kapow.